It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I personally, again, you guys know I don't put out podcasts unless I think you guys are going to learn something from them. This is an excellent podcast, probably one of the better ones I've done in a while, just because everything was presented perfectly. So we have a German Shepherd that had an incident with a kid, a young kid, lives with other young kids. And also we have some reactivity and things like that. And it's a great, great, great conversation with dog owners who are just trying to be responsible and make the right decision. So it's going to be lovely. This December, I'm having a dog training seminar at my facility. If you guys don't know, at the Upstate Canine Academy, I think it's the 7th and 8th. So it's next month. It's coming down. I'm so excited to get there. All working spots sold out in like minutes, it seems, definitely within the first day. And we still have audit spots. Audit spots, for you guys to know, is you come and watch me work with these dogs, right? So if you're a dog trainer, you're enthusiast, or you just want to help your dog become better, I'm literally taking 8 dogs with 8 different problems and working the owners and the dogs through their problems live. So you learn a lot, but also it's just a vibe. It's a great community. You know, the last seminars I've did in Netherlands and UK and at Nashville, people sit down and they go, this is my tribe. This is great. We're all on the same page. It's a safe place where people can ask questions and not get reamed out for, you know, asking questions about their dog and their training. And it's just a lovely weekend. All the information and tickets to come and watch and hang out for the weekend at my facility, take a tour of the facility, check things out, is linked in the description below. And I hope to see you guys at the Upstate Canine Academy. Enjoy this podcast. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. And I appreciate every single person that has me in their earbuds, their speakers right now. Love you guys. Talk to you next time. Bye. Okay. Yeah, let's pull the access up and then we'll walk through. I mean, you don't have to. You can continue to tell me what's going on.
Got it. Okay. Should be sharing it now.
Great. Yeah, let's pull up some information on good old Riggs. So he's e-collar trained. You've worked with a couple different trainers. Yeah. Right now you're in the military in Germany.
Yeah.
Right? And so, okay, 2 years old, and he's a fixed, no, what am I looking at here? So Riggs is 3, where did I see 2 year old? Oh, Charlie. Okay, I got you.
Our daughter.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay, so Riggs is a 3.5 year old fixed German Shepherd. So you've been through board and trains, you've been through obedience, e-collar trained. You want to start getting into, so high prey drive or high drive in general. So is this obviously a working dog, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, he's from a working dog line. He's a family dog.
Right. He's your family dog. Yeah. All right. So I guess let's start diving into, you know, why we're on the phone, right? So the behavioral background, super prey drive, super high drive, motivation is food, ball, tug, no behavioral issues the first 2 years, did fairly well with other dogs, right? So if you want to continue to walk, I mean, I can, read it or you can tell me. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. So, like the first kind of thing that happened was, when he was like, he wasn't even a year old. He was like 8 months or so. Mm-hmm. He was attacked by a dog in our apartment complex. So like now he's super, not comfortable with other dogs, especially when they run up on him.
Sure. Like, you mean like off leash or in general?
Yeah. It, just in general.
Yeah, but like when you're in the context of that, when you're out with him and dogs run up, obviously he's not cool with that. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Or if we walk in and, like another dog just like comes from behind or in, is on a leash, yeah. but just like see him approaching and, he doesn't take well to that.
So he's got pretty consistent leash reactivity regardless of if the dog is on or off leash.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So Charlotte was born like just over two years ago. I mean, he's been like super, super patient with her. She's a toddler. She doesn't understand any boundaries yet.
Mm-hmm.
We just watch for his behavioral indicators, like when he gets stressed out, and then we just like separate him.
Sure.
So now, because I'm in a pretty demanding position in the military, and my wife has a toddler at home, like most of the time, he spends like the majority of his time outside in the like our backyard, and it's fenced in, and he's developed a pretty intense reaction to other dogs like passing by the fence. Mm-hmm. It used to not be like this, but now if he sees another, and it's not with people. Now, when he sees other dogs, he'll like charge the fence. His hackles go up, and he's like barking really aggressively, and like jumping on the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And then, just like a couple months ago, we'd never had any weird things like this happen. But we had a group of people over, and he was outside, and so I was outside with another guy, and he was laying down or on his place cot, and then a family or a family came out with two young kids, and one of the kids started playing with him, and he was like getting stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to bring him inside. We hadn't done a whole lot of like, we weren't very good about his like play that day. We hadn't like got his energy out or yep. like done any training with him that day, and so I was walking him inside. And I had like my hand on his collar, and somebody said something to me, and I like let him go for a second. And he just kind of freaked out with all the people that were inside and just like bit this girl on her shoulder.
The young girl? Like,
yeah, the young girl. So now we're like really, really cautious. He has not been socialized with people or other dogs since the incident. Besides like my parents, and we haven't, we were close to rehoming him just cause we were so uncomfortable with what happened. Mm-hmm. And kind of just like looking for help on number one, based on that incident with a toddler in the house and another on the way, your opinion on like, if we can safely like keep Riggs in the house. And then number two, just like help on the reactivity in the backyard, and then like a solid like easy to follow training plan for him.
E-collar, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I just want to get a little bit more context on the incident. So, because I'm reading what you said here, and so. So basically he was put away, and when we opened the door, Riggs rushed inside your own home.
Yeah.
And then there was a older child.
Yes.
And that's where he bit this child.
Yeah.
And they were just playing on the floor.
Yeah. So she was sitting on the couch in here.
And she was on the floor.
And then he he came inside. She was on the floor. He came inside.
Obviously you guys jumped into action, but how do you feel like the bite was? You guys were there. So what did you feel it was? Was it like, hey, who are you in my house? Was it, I'm pissed, I'm scared? Did he hang on? Did he growl? Did he lash? Did he go back? What's the context there?
Oh, he did not go back.
Hi, Tom.
Hi,
I'm Alex. Sorry, this is my... So Dylan, like after he came in, so he really darted right in. He hadn't had interaction with this girl. They hadn't interacted at all. She was like crouched down on the floor playing, had really long dark hair that was covering her face. And he has like, when we've had people come in that have hoods up or something, like barked a little more at them in the past. So then Dylan was like taking care of the girl, made sure they were separated, and then asked me to take Riggs outside. And he went so easily. Like, obviously I had my hand on his collar, but I think he would have gone outside with just the command. He didn't try to re-engage. He, like, when he went outside, he was pretty chill. Like, he kind of, it was like he knew he did something wrong.
Did you guys have to get him off of her, or did he just go and bite her and then you guys, it was done?
I did have to pull him off. It seemed like he didn't realize that she was like a human, kind of. Okay. She was like in a weird position with her hair covering her face.
So it's tough to say. Obviously, not knowing, even if I was there, it's tough to say why he did it, because he doesn't have a history of being aggressive towards people. He's reactive towards dogs because of an incident he had had when he was a puppy, I guess, younger dog anyway. Okay, so here's things that come into mind when I'm walking and moving through these scenarios, because I do it all the time. I have kids myself now, which was never a thing, you know, in my professional career. I'd always talk about if, but now I have a 2-year-old myself, and I have a young infant too, and I have 2 dogs, and I have a high drive dog, and I have a big, goofy mastiff. But so I know where you're coming from about all of this, and I do work with quite a bit of this in general, like, you know, these things happen and it's like, okay, like so the thing that I look for is, in the beginning, is intention. Okay. Yeah. For an example, we had a client, not my personal client, but my facilities client, where a dog just exploded out of a door and just attacked a kid, like, with just zero reasoning. And it's a lot like what Riggs did, but this dog, like, wanted to keep going, like, really would have kept going. And so for me, that's the first thing I personally look for, is intention, because dogs can be put into situations that almost, you know, force them. Like, I talked to somebody recently that their kids basically back the dogs into corners and the dog nipped the kid. And I'm like, okay, you know, so that's the first thing that I try to look into, is the intention of, and the seriousness of it. Cause there's a difference between a correction and a fight or flight thing. And then there's just, to me, if I had to guess, it would sound like more frustration than anything. Yeah. From what you guys have explained to me, and his personality and also his demeanor after, like, I felt like we're going to go over management in a minute, but he got really overwhelmed and frustrated. Yeah. There's people over, there's kids over, and a lot of, like, working dogs, unless it's like their immediate family, they don't really do well in those situations. For an example, I can tell you right now, like my Dutch Shepherd, who I don't use her as a working dog, but she is a working line, kind of like with Riggs, where it's a working line dog that she could have easily, actually her siblings did go to a lot of state police and government officials, but yeah, so they have all of that. They just weren't formally trained. And so my point is like even when the cleaners come in, and a lot of times it's weird stuff. They're mops and vacuums, and they're different people. And she has a really she gets really defensive with these people because so my point is there's when because you guys have kids and it sounds like you have a growing family. Riggs himself, it doesn't seem like he's a threat to your immediate family. Although, because this happened, you have to be very mindful that it could happen again. And I think it sounds like what you guys have done already is you've done all the right things to say, okay, when Riggs is nervous or in a situation where he's feeling uncomfortable, you remove whatever you need to, whether it's the person or the stimuli or even him. But I think in this situation, again, when we talk about this isn't under the, behavioral euthanasia list at all or anything like that, because he has actually a pretty stable personality and this is a one-off thing and the intentions weren't to, just for context, I've maybe told three people in my 13 years that that's ever appropriate, and it's a conversation that's on the table. It's very rare, considering I work with a lot of dogs who have bite histories, right? So I don't throw that around lightly, and I just want to let you know because some people are holding their breath saying, like, because of the incident and the personality of the dog, I personally think, you have a high working class dog and you have, I don't know how many people were over, but let's say a handful of people over and there's kids. I think the best thing to do is you guys as a family and as a married couple, you guys have to make a decision to say, okay, do we want to manage the situation for the rest of our lives because we love Riggs and he's a great dog, but because you guys have put things into your life that weren't necessarily in your life maybe when you first got him or as a growing family, right? It's the same thing with me. The dogs came first or the dogs are here and then we start inputting toddlers and infants or even other people, right? Even if it's other people into the dog's life. So for me, I think as a dog trainer, but also as a dad and a father of two myself, I think you have a couple options. I think that the first option is obviously rehoming Riggs to a home that people don't have kids or maybe they have older kids and there's less likelihood of him making a mistake, which ultimately would put him into a better position and probably happier. But I don't – again, I'm just – this is kind of a widespread thing. You guys could say, oh – because if he's – or you guys could manage the situation a lot more intense and buckle down and kind of helicopter and say, we're not going to have Riggs around when there's kids around, other kids that don't live in our house or other people. And that will completely negate the problem as well. So I think that there's a tier system of the first question is this a dangerous dog? First of all, any dog can be dangerous. Second of all, what I look for is intention. Did the dog want to go back? Does this dog have a history of trying to bite people, trying to bite kids, things like that? Obviously, living with a toddler, it's not like he's out to get toddlers because you would have seen this with your own many times. And again, considering the context, it wasn't we were all sitting here watching a movie, chilling, and my dog walked up and bit somebody. Yeah. Again, these are things that I hear, right? So those are, okay, maybe there's something else going on. We had some people over, it was frustrating, the dog was probably frustrated, came in and took it out on a kid, unfortunately. That's not appropriate and I'm not advocating that that's okay. I'm just saying, can we make sense of the scenario? And to me, I would say there are some things that in the recipe that makes sense to me. But what do we do from here would be, in my personal opinion, what I would do is completely put rigs away when you have guests over, regardless. And that's discretion on your end. Like if you have a bunch of military buddies coming over, that's just going to ignore the dog. Then you can say, yeah, whatever. But again, when we're talking about, you know, maybe younger kids or people who don't like dogs that are going to make bad moves, that's just an easy, Riggs is in the other room, Riggs is outside, Riggs is in his crate. But not a lot of people have the capacity to do that, you know, because of this, the living environment that they're in. So that would be my first low-hanging fruit conversation. Doesn't seem like a dangerous man-eating dog. I think it was just a bad situation that, and personally for me, when you have that much buildup in a dog, like when our friends come over with their kids, I put my dogs away, mainly because it's just too much going on. And I don't want to and I don't want to babysit, right? I'm not really worried about them biting anybody or even becoming aggressive. But the thing is people don't talk about a lot is my personal dogs don't, they might not want to be there anyway, because they're, you know, especially with my working dog, she's like, if these kids can throw a ball, and she does that with my neighborhood kids. She literally hunts them down and brings them a ball and says, let's throw. Like she does it. She's so funny. She's cheeky about it, where if I'm like, no, I'm not playing with you because you're tired or your leg's sore, she'll just go in the cul-de-sac and look for a kid to play with. But when we have people in our home, again, like I put my dogs away for the most part, just because my one Mastiff is 140 pounds. So he'll knock over a kid, obviously unintentionally, or he'll knock over all the food on. So that's my first thing I would say. Do you have any questions on that?
No, it makes sense to me. And like, as far as can we do it? Yeah. I mean, we had already decided after this incident that like, if we wanted to keep Riggs, which we do, because we didn't think it was an intentional thing either, that we would put him up whenever, especially when we had other kids over, and really only when like my family or my wife's family comes over, would we like let him out, just because he knows those people.
Like actually staying with us.
Yep. Yeah. So. Yeah, that would be the management aspect of this, where you would just say, how can we keep, you know, think about it like this too. You know, you're in the military. You probably see this all the time with even military dogs. Like they're not treated like pets. They're in an outside kennel. They never go inside. Even if they did, they might be weirded out by it. You know, they're not messing around with civilians. They're not going up to people. They're working dogs. And I'm not saying Riggs, they're also trained that way, right? Where Riggs is actually exposed like a family dog. So it's a little bit different. I'm just saying like, don't feel bad about putting him away, because it's actually better for him. And he would probably prefer it instead of all this stimulation and stress of fight or flight and nervous energy. So, so again, there's no training that goes into involved with that. It's when we have people over, I don't want to stress out. Riggs doesn't want to stress out, and I don't want anything to ever happen again. So when we have people over, Riggs is away. The only other thing I would say is, obviously, when you go out and you bring Riggs out and about, especially as you transfer back to, you know, hopefully civilian life back in the States, you know, he's 3 years old now, so I'm assuming that that's going to be in his lifetime, hopefully, that you just have to be mindful. You bring him out and just advocate for him, and I know you probably do, but just make sure you advocate for him, to make sure that, you know, for me, if you guys know your dog. I'm not going to sit here and act like I know your dog, but just be mindful when you're out to make sure that you advocate and tell people no if they want to pet him, or you know, just be cautious about where you bring him and stuff, just because obviously when he gets to a certain threshold and he gets to a point where he's really uncomfortable or frustrated, he can do things that you never saw coming. So just as a well-rounded, balanced game plan here,
because it's not just about people coming into your home, because you can control that. But when you bring him out for a walk or you bring him to a park or something, sometimes you can't control certain things. So just make sure that you're kind of head on a swivel on that. But again, he's not a man eater. So, you know, some of the clients I work with quite literally can't go within 2 feet of somebody without them trying to kill them. I don't think Riggs is that dog. So, you know, just be mindful of it. That's all.
Okay.
Yep. Do you want to dive into the reactivity in the fence now?
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Sure. So I'm really big on not telling a fish not to swim. So again, you get any dog behind a fence and there's other dogs, or you're out on a walk and there's other dogs. Yay. I always talk about like the natural inhibition of dogs to become reactive because they don't like dogs. So there's that, right? Like they go out and they get frustrated and they become reactive. And so there's a couple of things, and I would say I'm an expert in leash reactivity because it's really what people come to me for. I would just say that there's a process in which we want to dismantle this. The ultimate goal is to change the dog's emotional response to the reaction they're reacting to, right? So let's say they see a dog and they get pissed or they get frustrated, or in some cases they get fearful and they get insecure and then they vocalize and puff their chest up. And sometimes they get excited and they want to go play. It's not always an aggressive thing in a sense of malicious intentions. But my point is once you start developing your dog in training and they start to become reactive, the first thing that our goal is again to change the emotional response to say, "Hey, you don't have to feel this way." But yeah. I'm also not naive to the idea that some dogs just don't like dogs, and there's nothing you're gonna do. You just have to say, "Hey, I get it." It's like a kid sitting at dinner, and we are all eating chicken and they don't like chicken. It's like, okay, well, you still have to be patient. You're not going to sit there and bang your, you know, flip the table and freak out, right? We still have to be respectful and patient and civil here. So there's like the first, again, that's like the first thing I talk about with the reactivity is sometimes reactivity is warranted to some dogs. They don't like dogs, or again, in your case, they've been attacked, so they feel extremely vulnerable on the leash because that had happened, right? So there's trauma involved potentially. So there's two ways that I typically will address it after we kind of go down this path of, does your dog actually just not like dogs or people, or is your dog fearful and insecure and nervous or whatever? But the general approach is to dismantle the reactivity with handling. So yeah. That's important. Like I tell this to my clients all over the world. If you come to me and you can't walk your dog from A to B in a heel and your dog is having behavioral issues, we can't touch the behavioral issues. It's like complaining to the contractor that the paint on the house is wrong without a foundation or even a lot picked out. It's like, you can't do this without that. Like that's the most fundamental thing that we need to even have that next step conversation, right? So that's really important if people are trying to accomplish their goals with their leash reactive dog, but they cannot, if they don't have foundation, if they don't have basics, if they don't have principles, you have no shot. So that's the first thing that you guys can audit at any time in your life with your dog to say, how much does our dog listen to us? What's the engagement like? So on and so forth. But part of the handling is putting your dog into a situation that can help them become more confident if they are reacting out of fear. And it could be that for Riggs, because especially on the leash, because of the, you know, incident that had happened when he was, I think you said 8 months. I have three different kind of, just again, generally speaking, I have three different moves here that I'll do is, I call it a dismantlement exercise. It's the inside turn, which is if your dog is heeling on your left side and you turn inside. So think about when a dog is looking at another dog, that's typically likely the only way that they're going to react or continue to build to then react. So if the eyes are directly staring at the thing and you do an inside turn with your left leg cutting into the dog and going the other way, that's an immediate dismantlement of the dog. The dog's eyes are off the dog. Now you're moving forward for four steps, and then you go back to the dog. Again, these are very basic procedural things, but these are the things that I typically do to help what I call dismantle some of the build. Because a lot of times dogs just get into this tunnel vision and the owner just holds their breath and they just force their way through. When I think it's important for dog owners to, and even dog trainers, because I've seen them make these mistakes too, is to just know that a lot of times you actually have more time than you think. Like, you need to take a breath and say, how can I help this dog through this instead of force this dog through this? So that inside turn, removing the dog's vision from the other dog, and then you start walking the other way and the dog takes a deep breath and goes, oh, good. Or they'll say, well, they got lucky. You know, it depends on how, you know, what the core of the reason of your dog is reacting, right? And then that's just, again, one piece of the pie. And then an outside turn, which allows you to turn the other way, which depending on, you know, what your dog is looking at in the scenario, if you're in a tight spot or you're in a big spot, just kind of like doing this outside turn, which is essentially taking, if the dog is on your left, taking your right leg and just spinning the other way, 180. And then there's the drawback recall, which is essentially exactly like, it's like a quarterback, right? You're out for a heel, your dog sees another dog and they go whoop and they start to build. And then you just backpedal backwards on the leash and you say, rigs come. And the important thing in these scenarios is you have to have foundation. So if the dog doesn't respond to, let's say the dog doesn't respond to the recall, you can correct them for that, but they have to know recall. So you come out, think about it like this, real life scenario. You're out for a heel, Riggs sees another dog, boop, pops up, starts to build. You can hear the breathing. And then you would just draw back and say, Riggs, come. He locks in on the dog, flips you off. You can correct him for not recalling. So you're using, these are just very basic skill sets that I start off with, but you're essentially using your body and your basic handling skills to dismantle the dog's building. And ultimately what happens with the majority of dogs, because they are fear-based reactive, they actually will be so engaged with you that they forget that the other dog's there.
And it is Ryan Seacrest here. Everybody needs some variety in life. That's what I love about Chumba Casino. They know how to keep things fresh and exciting. All their games are free to play, like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire. You can claim free daily login bonuses too. And they release new games every week. So spice things up with ChumbaCasino.com now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
And that's common because they actually don't hate other dogs. They don't want to kill them. They actually just go, oh God, there's a dog, I'm on a leash, what do I do? And they go, wow, get out of here, I'm big and I'm bad. And they just, and sometimes dogs just do that because they're boisterous young shepherds and, you know, they're kind of built for that type of stuff. So and then the other thing is just making sure that you have some sort of and this is in the preliminary stages, the building of the foundation, making sure you have some sort of motivation to be able to counter the dogs. I'm not talking about complete avoidance. I'm talking about what I call constructive avoidance, which essentially gives you an opportunity as a dog owner to pay the dog if they make good decisions. So let's say you did your recall and the dog is turning away from a dog that they feel like they hate or they're excited about, and you pay him with a beef liver or you pay him with a ball like he's motivated by. A lot of times with working dogs is they're like, screw the dog, give me the ball.
Yeah.
So that's really helpful too. And again, these are all just things to be mindful of. These are all things that have worked in the past for me individually or collectively. And then the last thing is making sure that you're holding the dog accountable for these actions. Which is what I think a lot of people also struggle with outside of handling. Let's say your dog starts to go, I'm going to kill you, dog, get out of here. They're barking, they're lunging, depending on who's holding the leash, they're getting dragged, or best case scenario is you're getting stressed. And you also have to be clear to make sure that the dog is being held accountable and corrected for that behavior. You're trying to correct the behavior. Correcting the behavior means you're doing something wrong. I need you to do something different, changing the outcome for everybody's benefit. very simple. So that matters too, because I've talked to thousands of dog owners, you know, across the world. And I think a lot of people have a subjective idea of what a correction is. And I think it's just important to make sure it doesn't really matter what you do. Like, you can yell at your dog, you can look at your dog, you can use a prong collar, you can do anything that helps the dog understand that what they're doing is wrong and to change their behavior and help them understand that they don't have to react to help them become less stressful is a good correction. So those are the two main things, is the dismantlement. Well, I guess we can break it into three: the dismantlement and handling, having good foundation, the motivation, making sure that, especially in the beginning stages, making sure that the dog understands that if they make a good decision, they get something really valuable. Because and again, this is on a dog who is new to this, right? If you get a really well-trained dog, or what I call a level three dog, 3 out of 3, they just do it. You know, it's like having a 12-year-old when you're like, hey, carry in the groceries for your mom. You know, and, you know, it's like at that point, you know, if they're two and it's cute because they carry in like a bottle of orange juice, you're like, oh, that's cute. And if you drop it or don't do it, I don't really care. But if they're a 12-year-old boy or a girl and you're like carrying the groceries for your mother and they say, screw you, I'm not, that's a problem. Like, right, there has to be fair warranted corrections. But the point is you need to be able to pay the dog if they do well and they make a good decision to help them overcome their potential fears, or just understanding for maybe even a working dog that playing with you when you see other dogs is a lot more fun than barking, reacting their head off and getting corrected. But lastly, again, making sure that you correct your dog, because the amount of people that I've talked to that said, I have this huge problem, Tom. I don't know what to do. My marriage is struggling. I might put my dog down. You know, I've seen a huge spectrum on it of how little and how much it can affect people in their lives. And I'm like, have you ever corrected your dog or told them no, or told them that what they were doing is inappropriate? And people are like, no. I'm like, well, how are they ever, you know, it's like employees or parenting. Like, how are they ever going to know that that is wrong unless you assertively say this is wrong? So those are the three things that I would start with. If we're going to talk about the outside in a minute. On that, just so you know, we do have a reactivity course as well that really dives into more, like, if you're thinking, yeah, this makes sense, but if you want to see it, my reactive to neutral course is basically me sitting down and talking about all the things I just talked about more in depth, but also the different variances of tools, and then also me actually working with reactive dogs and walking through that. And and right now there's a discount code YouTube. If you just use discount code YouTube, you get $100 off. So it's like 50% off that course. So that's a deep dive. And then do you have any questions on that?
No questions. We've done the, like, we're generally pretty good about the the dismantlement one is like not something that we've really done with him. Mm-hmm. We're great about the like motivation and then correction. We have this like big field right out behind our house, and I can, when he has his e-collar on, I can like keep him in a down and have him focused on me, and a mm-hmm. dog can walk by and do anything.
Good.
But yeah, it's really just like when we're walking by another dog or the like fence in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get into the fence thing in a second. So even my own personal dog, like Burley, he's a Borbul. So give you context. He's a Borbul. So he's a South African Mastiff. He's literally bred to be protective and kind of standoffish, right? That's why I actually got him. The moment I brought him home at 8 weeks, he charged my 7-year-old Dutch Shepherd into a corner. I was like, holy shit. So my point is genetics can make a dog. I already talked about this earlier, but genetics can certainly have a disposition in a dog to make them feel a certain way. And yeah. So my point is even when I'm out with my dog, Burley, and he's intact. And so he's this 11-month-old. He doesn't know if, do I rule the world or do I not? Am I still a puppy? Like, he's really starting to develop into this mature, you know, how much of a jerk do I want to be in life? Because he certainly can, because he's 140 pounds of complete muscle, and he's going to double in size, almost. His dad was 200. So my point is, when I'm out with him and I'm working on his leash reactivity, because he's explosive, he's like this super athlete, right? He's 140 pounds of solid muscle. And so when he sees another dog, he'll just go, whoa, there's a dog. And he'll, so I have to, my point is I have to be very assertive with him. Depending on the other dog, I don't run away. I don't keep walking. I actually will stop, correct him, and have him kind of face his fears. And for him, it's not a fearful thing. He is just very intense. He wants to literally go and suplex the dog and let him know that he's here. That's just what he wants to do. He doesn't realize that he could get into a fight, which could, I don't know. But my point is I just stop and I go, leave it. And I correct him. I don't keep moving. I just stop. I go, whoa. A good word is assertive. I go, leave it. And I go, that is inappropriate. Do not do that. And he might go off again, but I'm like, great, because I'm still here. I want to work through this problem. A lot of dog owners will just pass a dog when they're working with reactive dogs, and you only have a couple seconds to work on something, maybe within a day. And if you get a couple dogs, great, depending on where you live, right? But so that's the other thing too, is if you feel comfortable and you have good control, and of course it depends on the other dog. Like if the other dog is dragging their owner and it's okay, maybe you should get, that's not fair. But if, so I just stop, correct him, and I go, quit the crap, man. Stop doing this.
Okay.
And then I'll have treats. And then if he looks at me and goes, this is typically, oh, sorry. Okay, good. And then he gets up and then I put him in a sit and he looks at the dog, doesn't bark. And then he looks back at me, he gets paid. So I have to help him through these things. But he's just by nature, this big, reactive, aggressive, I'm freaking here type of brick house dog. So the e-collar work and the fence work is, again, like you have to – so a lot of my clients, again, will talk about this, and this is the way I usually approach it, is somebody will say, hey, Tom, my dog barks consecutively and habitually in the backyard. They bark at all people. They bark at all dogs. And some people, most people, or 90% of people are like, they're not aggressive. They're just reactive, like they see somebody, right? So here's the thing is – again, coming back down to, I always look at it from the dog's point of view. Why? They're in a backyard, so they're in their yard. You have a family. You have a protective dog by nature. So they're also suppressed in a way of they can't get over the fence, right? So they're a little contained, which can cause frustration, right? Naturally. So it makes sense why we're reactive, right? So somebody walks by with a dog, and the dog's just a lot of times alerting, hey, you know, hey, somebody's here, somebody's out there. They're just, you know, and it's interesting to watch, because I find that dogs are letting the house know, ah, somebody's here. Every, you know, it's like those funny memes of the dog, like, sitting there with big eyes, like saying, you know, I'm watching burglars go through my house because my owners told me to shut the F up. So it's like, it's interesting to see dogs do things that they actually think is productive for the family, right? And by family pack, like you can call it whatever you want, but your dog lives with you and it's they're a big role in your life, a big role, right? So they're kind of like, ah, somebody, am I doing good? Somebody's here. Sometimes they're bored. And it's not that at all. Sometimes they, because they're not getting enough mental and physical stimulation, when they are out back, they have nothing else to really do. And they haven't released that energy into anything today. Therefore, they're sitting there going, man, I'm bored. You know, just think about this. German Shepherd's in the back going, man, I'm so bored. I haven't played today. I haven't walked today. And then all of a sudden a dog walks by and they're like, I'm on it, right? So my point is we can talk about all these little variances of the boredom or the I'm doing my job or the reactivity of fear or whatever. But the point is you have two options. When you go, if your dog is barking at another dog that's basically on your property to them, technically, municipally, they're not, but to them they are. They're like, dude, they're right. They don't understand that that's not technically, legally your property. So they might as well somebody be walking into your house with another dog. So there's that, right? We got to be mindful of like, oh, it makes sense why they're barking. So to me, you have two options. You either Because I guess my point is I just don't think it's realistic to say I don't want my dog to never to bark at other dogs or other people when they walk by. Can you do it? Absolutely. But is it going to be perfect? Probably not. So to me, what I do is two things. Is I go out and I either say, basically quit the crap, which is like a leave it, knock it off. Thank you. I see the 3-year-old walking by with her mom from school, but we're good. You know, thank you. And then the other thing is recalling. So you could go out and work on some of this reactivity. So let's say you go out with your prong collar or your slip leash or your harness or your e-collar, whatever the heck you want to use to communicate. And somebody walks by with a dog and your dog goes, ah, and you go, leave it. You correct the dog. You can definitely start to correct the behavior. But the reality is because of how ingrained the behavior likely is out of instinct, you're just using suppression, which is common. Any obedience is suppression, typically. So let's say you put a dog into a down, you throw a ball. They're sitting there. They don't want to stay there, right? They don't want to stay there. But that's normal, right? So we go through suppression. I don't want to go to work. I don't want to go jujitsu. I don't want to go into the cold. I don't want to do, like, this is part of life. Like we do things every single 3 minutes that we don't necessarily want to do or have time to do, right? So I don't want to look at it as like suppression's this naughty word because it's not at all. It's just life. But my point is you can go out and work on that. But truthfully, what I would be doing is working on two things. I would either go out and say, leave it, and then correct the dog if they don't, but they have to know what leave it is. Or I would recall the dog back to you, put him in a down, wait for the distraction to go, and then break the dog. The only problem with that is the dog could sit there and bark in a down, and then you'd use leave it anyway. Or you could do both. Personally, that's what I would do. If I lived in an environment where my fence was a chain link fence and clear, and the dog were to be barking, and the people or the thing that they're barking at is still there, I would say, come, down, stay. Wait 5 minutes. The dog's in a down. The dog's in a stay because your e-collar is good. Your e-collar train's good. And then you go out, the coast is clear, and you break the dog. So essentially, like for an example, at 10:30, my cleaners are coming over, and I know what Lakota's going to do, my Dutchie. She's going to, for whatever reason, there's nobody else in the world that she's ever done this to. I don't get it. My wife and I are like so dumbfounded by this. But she gets so reactive to these cleaners. Because, they're coming into my home, and whenever somebody comes into my home, they're friends and family. So they're inviting, they're warm, we're engaging with them, they're engaging with the dogs, but cleaners are in to just work, right? So that's weird. I think that's the reason why she's like, what? You're alienated, like you're so weird. Like you don't even talk to mom and dad or whatever, you know? So it's just a different vibe. But my point is I already know that that's going to happen and she's going to be reactive. I'm not going to try to say, hey, these people who come in and don't really pay attention to you and carry these weird things and then mop and then leave, don't bark at. Don't think it's weird. That's not going to happen. What I do is I'll either put her outside, but then even outside she'll bark and go, oh, she does this big fear bark, and I'll just use the remote collar to say, leave it, and she stops. And so she's still looking at them with hackles going, I'm suspicious of you. But she's appealing to me to not react and bark. So there's this like, I'll do it, but I don't want to. And that's just a part of life, right? It's like back in the day when my whole life on Sunday morning, I had to go to church. I'm like, I'll go, you know, I'm dragging my feet. So it's kind of like that with them. So I think those are the options and the realities of how you should look at these situations is, Riggs is likely going to want to bark at all the people walking by your house because it's your house. I don't think it's realistic to say him seeing other dogs with you on the leash, you can work through. But in an environment where they're basically tethered to their own fence and dogs are walking by, I think it would be more of like, I get it. Thank you for letting me know, but stop barking because this is driving me crazy. Yeah, so would it help to put up like the privacy screens? I think dogs, yeah, could it help? Yes. The answer is yes. It could help. And you can try it because I think you can just you know, get them on Amazon and put them up with zip ties and see if it works. But I just think you got to, in my opinion, dogs are, it would help. Yes. I think it would help with like some of the minor distractions and him being able to visually see these things. But I've also seen it create more hypervigilance where they're like, I know they're there because I can smell them and I can hear them, but now I can't see them. And it almost makes it worse. Yeah. Okay. So it would be worth a shot. I mean, what's the with the screening for just one part of the fence, maybe just to try it and $50 or whatever. But I just find that when dogs are doing this, because, again, it's accumulation. It's not just one thing typically, right? It's they're bored. They haven't had outlets, and or they're protective or whatever. I just find that he's going to find a way. Like he's going to smell them and hear them before he even sees them anyway. It's just when he sees them, he actually knows exactly where they're at. So I likely would say that he's probably still going to do the same, but it's definitely worth a shot. It could. I mean, who knows? You might say, wow, this works a lot better. Try it. Yeah, you should try it.
Okay. This is just a minor, real quick question. So since getting over here and like having more kids and less time, you've been trying to figure out additional ways to work on like the mental stimulation along with the physical, because we could run him all day and it still might not be enough for him. Our last trainer said that they didn't like the like Kongs or anything like that, that they were like bad for the dog's teeth or something. But we've been scatter feeding when we don't feed him by hand recently to like the sniffing and stuff. And that seems to have helped, especially because we've had issues with our e-collar. And it takes a while to get new parts over here. But
well, I think just if the question is how do we provide more stimulation to a dog? For your trainer to say that the Kong is not good because it hurts their teeth or whatever. I haven't, but again, I'm not a dentist for dogs, so I haven't experienced that. I think that the Kongs are typically pretty dang safe. Actually, I get in trouble sometimes for people saying I give my dog soft bones from the butchers because it cleans their teeth, and people are like, use a Kong, it's way safer. I'm like, okay, you can't win, really. But I think the Kongs are pretty dang safe. I would just, fill them with your dog's favorite filling and then freeze them. I would buy like two or three of them at a time. But again, that's just a pacifier. That's how I use it. Like, again, if the cleaners are coming over and my dogs are just going to sit there and look at them the whole time, I'll give them like a bone or a Kong or something. So I think I always explain it that all dogs have two tanks. They have a mental tank and a physical tank. And some dogs have way bigger tanks depending on breeds. So like, my St. Bernard or my Mastiff, their physical tank is easy. One walk a day and they're pretty dang good, like a Shepherd or a Cocker Spaniel or something, their physical tank has to be exhausted for a lot longer. And same thing with the mental tank. So as you know, if you don't wear those out, you will run into issues and frustration likely. Just like with people, like if I go and work out, I feel so much better. Even if you just take a walk around the block, you just feel better. So I would say the scatter feeding is good. Obedience is probably going to be your best thing for him. So it would be thresholds on obedience with like a ball. So doing things like I do this with Lakota almost daily if I have time. It would be sit down, throw the ball, heel, break, and really just having this lever to be able to get your dog on impulse control. So they're constantly thinking. And what that does, for an example, is let's say I have your dog's favorite tug. I'm playing with them. I out them. I throw the ball and I say, come, and they come back to me. And then I put them into a sit, and then I put them into a down, and then a heel. And they're like, is it time? So they're mentally just pushing the limits of thresholds to make sure I don't want to make a mistake. Is it time? And then you break them and they go and they savagely grab the ball, bring it back. You play with them again. So I would say the best thing to do for mental stimulation is just training, keeping that mind flexed and open and really challenged, I think, is the biggest key component when you're doing mental stimulation with the dog, is challenging them. Some people will say that they do the same thing over and over again with their dog, and it's better than nothing, but it's nothing compared to challenging your dog with different things, different obstacles. And like I said, if you have better obedience, the easier it is, because again, you know, let's say you throw the ball and you send the dog to the ball and you recall them off the ball. And they're like, and they come back and they're like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? And they're just anxiously working through you. Sit down, stay, heel, come. Like you're just kind of pushing them and challenging them. And then you break them to the ball. And so I would just do things like that. That's what works the best for my working dog, is she just likes being challenged, and she's just like, you know, her eyes are just ripping through me to like get to the next level. So,
okay, he's like, sometimes he's like too good at obedience, where we'll like, we have like all these, like we have a box and we put them in like box, or we add like this little, like circular thing that we train him to put his paws on.
Yeah.
And
touch.
So we like, yeah, exactly. And so sometimes it's like even that can seem like it's too easy for him, just because he's so good at obedience.
Yeah, and again, like, just challenge him more. Like, the people say that all the time, like, oh, my dog is so obedient. I'm like, just keep challenging. Like, I don't know, like an Elon Musk. Like, he probably gets bored with normal stuff. He probably is like, oh, I made a car company, I'm going to make a jet company or a rocket. You know, so my point is just like, no matter how good you are, you can always get better. And I think it's important with dogs, don't stay stagnant. Like, if, like, it's kind of like what I was just saying, is if you're doing the same thing over and over again, the touch pad, the box, the place, and you're just sending him there and breaking him and sending him breaking, like, challenge him more. So put the place out, put the touch pad out, and make him decide like which one he wants to go to. And then again, like, recall the dog and then down the dog on the way to you. Throw the ball, let him chase the ball, down him on the way to the ball, recall him off the ball right before he gets it. Like, those are the types of things that once you get high level, you can play around with to really keep him guessing. And you can just see, like, again, when I'm working with Lakota, I can literally see her eyes like thinking and processing, and they're just waiting, anticipating for that release command, and they're just working so hard. And I can just tell she's not running a lot, but she is, her mind is cooking on the next thing. And that's what I would suggest.
Okay. Awesome.
Any other questions you guys have?
The best way to introduce Briggs to them, so that like we don't have to keep him up the whole time.
Yep. So introducing a dog like this to new people is definitely a challenge, but to be honest, like, you just have to pick and choose your kind of read the room. Okay. So it's just like with human behavior, man. Like, you know, how you need to act or whatever in different rooms, right, with different people, right? So I think it's important to know, okay, again, we're having some soldiers over and they're bringing their kids. Riggs is not going to be involved. Okay, we have a couple soldiers over to, you know, hang out. Okay, Riggs can probably be involved. So I think, you know, there's a couple different ways to do it, because there's actually a lot of different introductions for different reasons, right? So if it's like, I just want to be able, if I have some adult friends over, I want to be able to also have my dog over, or in a situation where like, hey, we're having some adults stay with us for a week, that's a challenge, right? It would be, neutrality is important. I think that that's really like the first thing, is just neutrality. So I think a lot of people just, they reach for the stars and they're like, all right, Riggs, I want you to go up and jump in Uncle Jim's lap and be buddies with him within the first 2 days or something, you know? And I think, you know, obviously just taking things slow. So if you were to ask me what the best scenario for you guys would be, if you said, hey, we're having some friends stay with us or family members stay with us, and they're not really sure about Riggs, or Riggs not sure about them, or they haven't met, it would be, the first thing is like, okay, you guys are coming at 4. Great. We can't wait to see you. We're excited. We're going to be burning some energy with Riggs between 3 and 4. And then, hey, when you guys get here, we're just going to go for a walk with the dog and, you know, just go around the, wherever you live, just, we're going to go for a walk. We're going to hang out. And as we're walking throughout the process of the introduction process, it's going to be, again, neutrality. It's not like, oh, try to pet Riggs, try to take the leash, try to do this. It's like, he's not a man eater, so he's not going to like all of a sudden snap and try to kill somebody. He's just not going to want somebody he doesn't know in his face and in his business. He's not a pet dog, right? Which is like pet dogs you can do that with, right? I talk about these things, and people with like service golden retrievers that are like therapy dogs, they're like, that's bullshit. I'm like, I'm not talking about your dog, actually. I'm talking about a different dog, right? It's like the workout that The Rock does compared to ours. It's a lot different, right? It's like different genetics here, people. So I would just look for neutrality, and then you just go back to the house, and you know, have your e-collar, and you basically just kind of live your life, really. I would just say, hey, just ignore Riggs. And I think the final step, if it's like what Lakota does, again, she's never had any problems with people. She just reacts to the cleaners for some reason. It would be, you know, going out to the yard and playing fetch. So if Riggs is a real fetch hound and really enjoys it, that's where you can say, hey, Uncle Jim, here's the chuck it, throw this sucker. And then you start the play process. But again, just be like, look, you know, he's not a pet. You should have explained to people. Like, that's been my whole career, is explaining to people that training an aggressive dog with a bite history with certain equipment is not the same way you're going to train a puppy golden retriever, you know, and just making sure people understand that different dogs need different things for that reason. And so you got to tell people, like, hey, he's not going to like come and love up on you or be friendly with you. He's probably going to ignore you once he's comfortable with you. And actually, if he's ignoring you, that means you're in. And I would just explain that to people, you know, right when they come in, like, just ignore him literally forever. He's not going to be your buddy probably. So so that would be my process, is go for a walk, come back, have neutrality, you know, have your e-collar on just to kind of control the environment a little bit more. But again, it doesn't sound like he's a man eater and he's going to go after everybody that comes into your house. I just think the more control you have over him, the sharper he's going to be and the more comfortable your guests are going to feel. And again, even with my Mastiff, he's super in my family's face because he's like this Velcro dog. And I use obedience to counter his Velcro-ness versus maybe a dog being skeptic of people. So I'll place him and down him and let him stay there, you know, things like that. Just obedience is just, again, it comes back down to your basics. People are like, I have a dog with a bite history, or I have an aggressive dog, or I have a sketchy dog, or I have a puppy that loves everybody and I want people to come over. If you don't have good foundation, you can't do shit. You just have to hold the leash. That's it. That's your option. Because you can't get your dog to do anything. It's like, well, how do I get him not to be so excited? I'm like, you can't, because they're a golden retriever and they love people. That's never going to happen, right? You have to use your obedience. It's the same principles we use with basic manners with children, right? It's like, naturally, kids aren't going to say please and thank you because they're like taking the juice and they're sucking it down and they're like, thank you, right? You have to tell them to say these things. It's manners 101. So you have to tell dogs, we're not going to jump on people. We're not going to bark at people. We're going to go into our place while we're eating dinner or whatever. Like, these are the manners that you have to have to live with dogs. And people just try to cut that shortcut and say, I just want my dog to stop jumping, stop barking, stop running away. It's all countered with manners. It's like, right. I don't want my kids to tell me to shut up. I'm like, do your kids have any manners or do you have any foundation? No. So same thing.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Well, it was lovely meeting you guys. Thank you for your service. And I wish you guys the best and a safe deployment over there in Germany for however long you're there.
I appreciate it. You've been super. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Good luck. Talk to you later. All right. Bye.
All right.
It can get lonely climbing Mount McKinley, so to entertain myself, I go to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, I can play hundreds of online casino-style games for free, like online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Plus, I get a daily login bonus. It's just too bad that up here, I don't have anyone to share my excitement with. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Live the Chumba life anytime, anywhere. Play for free now at ChumbaCasino.com. VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.